T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I was disappointed, but I understood the situation. I mean, it obviously was a smart decision, given how the game almost ended. But, Flo's job first and foremost is to win football games, and I respect the decision, and it's my job to not put him in that position.
And it's Josh Rosen. After the Dolphins lost to the Washington Redskins, he was pulled from the game for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He was talking about the coaching decision from Brian Flores there. The Dolphins will be here Sunday. And are a 16.5-point underdog to the Bills. We're going to go to our Western hotline right now. We're going to be joined by Chris Whittingham, host of Dolphins coverage on WQAM radio in Miami. Chris, it's Howard and Jeremy. First off, good morning. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
Chris, I wonder what it's like to be a fly in the wall in that quarterback room. Fitz and Rosen seem like smart guys who definitely know what's going on with this organization. And, I'd imagine it's tough to be a quarterback for that team.
Yeah, and it's been interesting. I saw Kurt Warner tweeted yesterday that any quarterback in this situation would really be put in a position to fail. And I think that's probably something that they're commiserating over as well. When you look at, the offensive line, on top of the fact that it's been decimated, ahead of the season, by the acquisitions and the lack of acquisitions that they've made on that offensive line, it's been decimated by injuries too. So you already have basically backup level players playing in that offensive line, and you've only made it worse by having those backups get hurt, and all their backups are playing. So you combine that with a receiving core that's also been hurt by injuries this year after losing Kenny Stills ahead of the season, and there's just not a lot of places to succeed. And it's been interesting to watch. Obviously Josh Rosen played well in their last two games against the Chargers and the Cowboys, but for the most part this year, it's whoever is the backup is more likely to play well in the game. That's happened in 3 of the 5 Dolphins games this year. So I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason behind it, but the amount of commiseration that must be happening with, I don't know how I'm supposed to succeed under these circumstances, has to probably be the most dominant talking point in that quarterback room.
Is that dominant throughout the entire locker room, do you think?
Probably, yeah. I think that it's interesting because a lot of the conversation is about tanking and ultimately what tanking actually is. I think a lot of people are sort of under the impression that tanking is a systemic approach from the team to lose, that the intent of the team is to lose games, when actually it's an organizational, basically stripping down of a roster that allows it to not have any talent so that the aggregate talent does not win any games. And I think that's obviously what the Dolphins have done here, but that doesn't mean that there's not an emotional cost to the question. There's not an emotional cost to getting very close to winning and not winning. And for the players, I'd imagine they often feel like they're not in a position to win and that their organization is letting them down. And then you add on top of the fact that there are many fans that don't even want to see them win, that were quite delighted when they failed that two-point conversion against Washington. So I can't imagine what that feeling is like. It must be counterbalanced, though, by the fact that there are many, many players in that locker room that have to feel like they're getting dozens and dozens of snaps in NFL games that they otherwise never would. I mean, you run through some of the names on this roster, and there are not players that would be playing for other NFL teams that would be playing for the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. They get to play by virtue of the fact that they're on the Dolphins, and maybe one or two of them can emerge from that pack and end up being either part of the Dolphins or part of another NFL team.
When it comes to tanking, we're very familiar with it. I'm laughing listening to you describe that because we went through this a few years ago with the Sabres. And at the time, it was a divisive issue. Now, I'm not talking about players. I'm just talking about fan base. It was a very heated season, and I was wondering what...
But it was also exciting, which I imagine for the people that want them to finish in last... Man, they had to be really that the 2-point conversion had to be the most dramatic play of the year.
Which is why you say, some fans would have been angry if they won the game. I get it. I mean, if you're designed to get to the top of the draft, What, you don't want to win a meaningless game against Washington that might cost you the number one overall draft pick, and that's the crux of the debate. While some fans may think it's just, you know, the worst thing you can do is design a plan that way, and others are like, well, heck, if you're doing it, let's go 0-16. Let's get this thing done.
Yeah, and I guess the difference between that and a hockey season would be that at least if you're tanking as a hockey team, you can still win 18 games and right. accomplish your goals, right?
Yeah.
Whereas I think the Dolphins fans have been, or at least the ones that are on board with this, have been sort of nervously looking at the standings every week and going, come on, Cincinnati, win a game already.
Right.
And checking off, oh, the Jets won this week. All right, they're done. Denver won the week before. They're done. And so and there is sort of a nerve about, well, I don't know if we have any margin to win any games, and especially against a Washington team that came in 0-5. And based off that performance, does that look like they're going to win many more? Yeah, I do think, particularly because there is obviously the one end goal out of all this, and that's Tua Tagovailoa, the Alabama quarterback, where it does feel at this point, if they end up with anybody else, even if that anybody else is a really good prospect, whether it's Herbert or Fromm or Burrow or whoever ends up, or Hurts, that ends up coming out of this draft, that it will ultimately be a disappointment if it's not Alabama's quarterback that Miami is getting. And then, you know, obviously there's the other added layers of having Pittsburgh's first-round pick, having Houston's first-round pick, that basically the Dolphins fan this season is rooting for losing both of their team and the losing of Pittsburgh. Obviously, they traded Minka Fitzpatrick for their first-round pick. They traded Laramie Tunsil for two first-round picks from Houston. And even New Orleans as well, that's not going particularly great because the Dolphins own their second-round pick this year. But, yeah, I mean, that's basically all you're left to root for. And it's interesting because there is a real divide, and I get this doing the pregame show because we do the pregame show from the stadium during home games. And it's still kind of amusing almost that there are fans that come up to us and they're like, man, I really want to get a win today. Like, I want to win the game. And there is such a divide between those fans, those diehards that show up, you know, to the stadium on a hot October's afternoon in South Florida, and those that are on social media for most often watching the game from home going, I really want them to lose because that's ultimately best for the team. And that divide, I think, is something that you were probably alluding to with the Buffalo Sabres fans, is there is a real divide between almost like the internet understanding the conversation and the fans that, like, I just like sports because I like watching my team win, and I want to enjoy watching a game.
Yeah,
and that divide is definitely playing out with the Dolphins.
The one thing I would ask about the Miami Dolphins, how they've gone about this, which is maybe a little bit different from hockey. I mean, it's a smaller roster, of course. Is, you know, you can have that plan. We're going to stockpile picks. We're going to move players. We're going to open up cap space. All that stuff. But I was still surprised at, like, say, the Tunsil trade or the Fitzpatrick trade, because I wonder. Like, you don't, I would think in the rebuild, you still would want some talented players at the core of your product as you go through the rebuild. And it just looked like they decided to take, you know, it's one thing to move away from Kiko Alonso. It's another to trade your best offensive lineman and a really talented member of your secondary.
Right. I think a lot of the moves that were made in the offseason made a lot of sense in that perspective. For example, they took on some more dead money on Ryan Tannehill's contract. They get a fourth-round pick from Tennessee instead of, say, a sixth-round pick, right? Mm-hmm. You're sort of – the mode at the moment is find value wherever it is.
Yep.
And I think that was pretty smart up until those two big moves. The Tunsil one is obviously interesting because he's on the brink of making a huge money extension, and I just don't know if the Dolphins were prepared to pay it basically during a time where they don't think they're going to be winning the Super Bowl, if it's the next 2 years.
Right, okay.
So that obviously looms over. And also, I mean, it's an overwhelming trade-off. I mean, in the moment, a lot of people were saying, what is Houston doing? They don't have a general manager. They've given up two first-round picks and a second-round pick for a left tackle. And Chris Breer, the Dolphins general manager, told the story, and I have no reason to doubt him, that Laramie Tunsil walked into the room, saw what was on the board, and said, yeah, I'd probably trade me for that too. And it was such an overwhelming offer. Now, the Minka Fitzpatrick one, I don't think was necessarily based off of them seeing a valuable player but seeing a more valuable asset. I think that there was real discord between what Minka Fitzpatrick saw himself in a defense and how the Dolphins coaching staff did.
Okay.
There was a role. There was some confusion over what the role was going to be, and some disagreements over the role, over what the role was going to be. And so there was just a philosophical disagreement. They put him on the market. They got in my opinion, but it'll end up being a pretty damn good first-round pick in return, and they'll see if maybe they can find a player that fits more with what they want to do. So, I mean, obviously these things are individual circumstances, but the end product is I don't know who is on this current team. There can't be but a handful of players that are on this current team that you consider to be building blocks of any kind of future, and they're going to have to nail draft picks. They're going to have to nail free agent signings.
That leads me to one of the other things I want to bring up before we let you go. We're with Chris Whittingham, by the way, from WQAM Radio in Miami. You look at their stats, Chris. You look at their offensive stats, they're awful. You look at their defensive stats, they're awful. Is there anything they do well? We're all looking at this game as a guaranteed win for the Bills. You should come in Sunday and not have a problem beating Miami. Are there any players or anything in particular they do well that you should actually be worried about?
Obviously, there's a couple of players that have been mainstays for a while. Like Xavien Howard's a corner that they made the highest paid corner in the NFL, but he actually sat the Washington game out for what a lot of people deem to be reasons.
Competitive reasons? Really? Knee. That's funny.
Yeah, that he had a sore knee in practice, but he practiced all week. And then we get to Sunday, and he didn't play.
That's good.
They're conveniently playing an 0-5 team. I don't know.
That's fine.
And then the other is Rashad Jones, who's also actually missed sort of surprise games for no reason. But I would probably say they're secondary, but their opposing quarterback rating is 130. Their quarterback rating of their own team is 55. I mean, it is that disparate. I to be honest with you, don't think that there's a great deal that the Dolphins do well. For me, it kind of starts on both fronts, this weakness, because on the offensive line, I already described they came into the year with Laramie Tunsil expected to play at left tackle. They're now down to what would essentially be their fourth choice left tackle if you move from Tunsil to Jesse Davis to then Julian Davenport, who they traded for from Houston, to a player that they're playing now, left tackle named Jamarcus Webb, who's just sort of a journeyman player. It's just they're so poor on the offensive line that it's difficult for them to get anything going on the ground. Their passing game is entirely dependent on short passes. I think Josh Rosen's average air yards was 1.3 at the weekend, which is the lowest in the league this season. They just don't have any time to do anything offensively. They can't get anything going on the ground. And then on the defensive side, they can't stop the run because they don't really have any talent other than their first-round pick, Christian Wilkins, up front. Taco Charlton is their leading sack getter, despite the fact that they signed him after week four. After week three. And it's just they have nothing up front on either side. And I guess if there's a way you're going to gut a team, people talk about the trenches all the time as the most important place to win games. The Dolphins have nothing in either trench. And so that it just sort of leads to rampant incompetence across the whole of the field in just about everything.
Well, that's the way it looks as an outsider. So looking at it, Chris, thanks. Thanks for coming on with us and hang in there the rest of the season.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.